Well, I'm grateful to Father Dan for his invitation to preach this morning in your basilica. I'm even more grateful to my friend Deacon Michael, who turned down Father Dan's first invitation to preach in your basilica. I came this morning from beautiful Mundelein, Illinois, Mundelein Seminary, rising very early before dawn. I drove in the blizzard to be with you. My name is Deacon Ryan, as Father Dan said, and I'm a transitional deacon in the Diocese of Joliet in Illinois, and I'm a student with many of your seminarians at Mundelein Seminary in Chicago. I went to college with Father Dan, so if anyone has any questions, let me know. During the summer between college seminary and theology, many bishops send their seminarians away to spend the summer in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska, at the Institute for Priestly Formation at Creighton University. During the 10 weeks in Omaha, seminarians learn and begin to implement a spirituality for the diocesan priesthood. We're not monks, after all. We don't spend all day in prayer and study. And we're not exactly missionaries going out always on the go in foreign lands. We're just your average run-of-the-mill parish priest. And in many ways, we are an embodiment of what St. John Paul II calls active contemplation. How do we stay rooted and grounded in our relationship with Jesus as very busy people? How do we guard our relationship with Jesus if we're always on the go? One of the attitudes we are warned against, one that is a constant temptation in the often monotonous routine of daily life, is the tendency to view life and ministry as one dumb thing after another. Another day, another mass, another anointing, another angry letter, another pancake breakfast, another school visit, another funeral, another baptism. For some of you, the one dumb thing after another looks different, but feels the same way. Another lunch to pack, another deal to close, another carpool with my annoying coworker, another broken copy machine, another leaky faucet, another silly soccer game to sit outside at, another spring musical rehearsal going late while I sit in the parking lot with a dying phone. It's unlikely, of course, that the prophet Job lived in Grand Rapids, but hearing him in the first reading this morning makes it seem like his life and our lives are not really all that different. Job spoke, saying, "Is not man's life on earth a drudgery? Are not his days those of hirelings? He's a slave who longs for the shade. So I have been assigned months of misery, and troubled nights have been allotted to me. I'm filled with restlessness until the dawn. Remember that my life is like the wind. I shall not see happiness again." Nice. Now, look at Jesus. When it was evening, after sunset, they brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. The whole town was gathered at the door, and he cured many. Rising early before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. And Simon and all of those with him came and said, "Everyone is looking for you." And he told them, "Let us go to the nearby villages. For this purpose have I come." After a day of ministry, curing the mother-in-law of Simon, Jesus is at home. And after sunset, the whole town is gathered at his door. It never stops. Jesus is up late doing his thing. And then he gets up very early before dawn to go pray, also doing his thing. He is active in his ministry, in the carrying out of his duty, and he's committed to his prayer, also carrying out his duty. When Jesus rises very early, his reaction is not, "Great, awesome, another stupid day." If his motivation came only from himself, and if the greatest good of his life was only himself, he may very well have had such an attitude. But the greatest good for Jesus was not Jesus, but the will of his Father. Even in the midst of his prayer, Simon and those with him came and said, "Everyone is looking for you." And it's always interesting to compare various translations of the Bible, especially in regard to the way translators present very small details. In the New American Bible, the translation of the lectionary, everyone is one word. But in the Revised Standard Version, my preferred translation, everyone is two words, everyone. Everyone is looking for you, and everyone is looking for you. Everyone, the whole population of the cosmos, is looking for Jesus, the one who is the center and the origin and the climax of all history. But at the same time, everyone is looking for Jesus. I, Deacon Ryan, in all of my individuality and my particularity, am looking for Jesus. So now again, look at him. What's his reaction to being interrupted in prayer? Geez, Simon, can't you see I'm praying here? You know, he's mumbling one stupid thing after another, these people. No. He told them, "Let us go on to the nearby villages that I may preach there also. For this purpose have I come. Everyone is looking for me? Then let's go find them. For this purpose have I come." And this is the beautiful point. Everything is God's initiative. In the beginning, long ago, God, on his own initiative, broke his own silence and spoke into the void and created. We sense our own yearning for him, which does exist in us, whether we acknowledge it or know it or not. We sense our yearning only because he has searched for us first. We are looking for him only as a response to his having been looking for us. In the Catechism of the Catholic Church, that terribly large and boring but 100% necessary book, we read in paragraph 2567, God calls man first. Man may forget his creator or hide far from his face. He may run after idols or accuse the deity of having abandoned him. But the living and the true God tirelessly calls each person to the mysterious encounter known as prayer. The faithful God's initiative of love always comes first. Our own first step is always a response. Isn't that magnificent? God calls man first. Man may hide from him or run from him or accuse the deity of having abandoned him. But even in that, our own first step is always a response. This means that there is nothing outside the realm of Jesus. He comes to us first. He seeks us first. He yearns for us first. He finds us first. And from this fact, we can learn the mantra of Jesus. Come to me anyway. But Jesus, what about my sins and my faults and my failings? Come to me anyway. But I'm not very good at this and my unworthiness and my doubts and my fears. Come to me anyway. Life with Jesus as his disciple is never just one dumb thing after another, because he is the one who makes all things new. And if he's right in saying that the reason he has come is to go always on to nearby villages, to the villages where you and I live, to the villages where you and I live our lives every day, seeking him, looking for him. He comes to those places to seek us first, and to find us first, and to be with us first. And this means that life with him is always fresh, always new. Does this mean it's always easy? No. Always really fun? No. Always great? No. Sometimes life is, objectively, one dumb thing after another. But friends, we are Christian now. We're different now. Life, even in the midst of its difficulties, is not a drudgery, a kind of living death. That is the philosophy of nearly every atheistic regime from the beginning of time, but that, brothers and sisters, is not the philosophy of the people of God. The salvation for which we hope has a name. The redemption for which we long has a name. The person for which everyone and everyone is looking has a name. And his name is Jesus. He is the one who comes to us first, who seeks us first, and who does not hesitate to make himself known, even in the little dumb moments of life. Yes, it's true. Everyone and everyone is looking for him. And yes, it's true that he's already here.